Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be joined in just a minute by Iraj Azizian of Shireen Nashat's Sarbazan to gain the perspective of the monarchist side of the Iranian political scene. You can find those Sarbazan websites at www.sarbazan.org or go to www.alinashat.org. And you can see what that side of the Iranian political debate is all about. The Sarbazan organization was formed a number of years ago by Ms. Nashat out in Los Angeles to commemorate the memories of those who fell in the name of the Imperial Iranian Armed Forces at the time of the Islamic Revolution in that country in the late 1970s. Before we bring Iraj on, I wanted to finish up this commentary that I have penned both for the American Free Press as well as for the Republic Broadcasting Network and Al Bawaba in Amman, Jordan. Iraj Azizian, how are you, sir?
Good morning, Mark. I'm doing very well. Thank you for inviting Sarbazan organization for this interview. Madam Shireen Nashat is president and founder of Sarbazan organization and was not able to make it for this interview and asked me to do this interview on behalf of her because our organization is loaded with high volume of work and we are short on human capital. There is another website if anybody wants to check it. It's called www.alinashat.org. So if you're interested to read our monthly papers or weekly papers, you could go there and see what we have over there.
Yes, and I'll repeat those throughout the broadcast. That's www.alinashat, that's spelled A-L-I-N-E-S-H-A-T, alinashat.org. And also www.sarbazan.org. You know, Iraj, there are a number of things that we could talk about this morning. One, to start off with, I am reading in the New York Times and in the London Financial Times and in the Wall Street Journal and the rest of what I refer to as the corporate media, that there are different factions in the Islamic Republic in the Iran regime in Tehran. Are there different factions? And what is your response to that perspective?
The Sarbazan organization has a very clear understanding about what is the Islamic Republic of, like in Iran, the system does not have a faction. That's some kind of image which has been created by the cleric regime and their allies in the West, that the cleric regime has factions, and so there are entities that the cleric regime has exported outside their country that they are revolutionary guards, like Akbar Ganji, Mohsen Sazegara, that these people are known to serving their master in Tehran. When we are talking about the cleric regime, we are talking about a system, and this system is called normative control model. In this system, we have agencies that are governing itself and is trying to control the other agencies and making sure that everyone is following their leader and is not disobeying the command of the leader. So a system has been created which is very massive and trying to make sure the people who are not following will be eliminated from the process. And then we are talking about the electoral process, which is very difficult to get into the system. They have a body of agencies called Guardian Council, that six people are appointed by the parliament in the Guardian Council, and six people are appointed by the Ayatollah or Son of God to this council. And if a candidate wants to be in office, not to be elected, to be in office, the Guardian Council will determine that candidate will be in office or not. So when a candidate will be in office, is not representing the interests and diversity of their constituency, but the entrance of what head of the state wants. As a result, in this model, it's the state that governs people, not the political parties. And because people did not give their consent or will for that person to be in the office, this is a legitimate state which is governed. So to assume that there are factions, different political parties are running in the place, it is totally wrong. And it is it's just a propaganda which created by Akbarijan, Genji, and Mohsen Sazegara and other entities that they claim that they are anti the cleric regime, but they are serving the best interests of the cleric and they are spreading propaganda in that nature. And their hope is to prolong the cleric regime. They have no intention of changing the regime and to have a proper political system which is representing the will of people.
Have you ever had a situation in Iran with this Guardian Council, Iraj, where I noticed they have 12 members? As you indicate, there are six that are appointed by Ayatollah Khamenei, and then there are six that are elected by the Iranian Majlis or parliament. If you had a situation where, in regard to certain issues, for example, vetting candidates for office, there was a 6-6 tie within the Guardian Council, would Khamenei then cast the tie-breaking vote? Is that how it would work?
Khamenei believes that he is the son of God, who is because he calls himself Ayatollah, and there are other clerics who call themselves Ayatollah, and he has the final vote. He will decide who will get into office or not, and he is the one who is going to determine what candidate is qualified or disqualified. Yes,
very, very interesting. And again, it's a situation where, of course, even the Western media has reported from time to time that there have been all kinds of candidates who have attempted to run for office in Iran who have been disqualified by this Guardian's Council. We'll be back with Iraj Azizi and Asar Bazan. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. You can check out those websites at alineshat.org or sarbazan.com. Stay tuned. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're talking to Iraj Azizian today. He represents Shireen Nashat's Sarbazan organization in Los Angeles. Sarbazan gives us the monarchist side of the Iranian political scene. You can find their websites at www.alineshat.org and also www.sarbazan.org. At the beginning of the show, of course, I was reading my new commentary for the American Free Press and Al-Bawaba and the Republic Broadcasting Network entitled Mark Dankos to American Patriots, Bob Barr for President? Forget it. Why do I say that? Check out Mr. Barr's votes for the USA Patriot Act and also the vote for the authorization of Mr. Bush's war in Iraq in May of 2003. Seems impossible to me that a Libertarian or Constitution Party candidate could possibly get away with those types of paper trails, but that's exactly what Bob Barr is attempting to do, as is chronicled in yesterday's New York Times on page one. We're now back with Iraj Azizian talking about various things going on in Iran and getting, for the Western listening audience, an opportunity to understand the monarchist side of that present debate. Iraj, different things about the monarchist movement. Are there different factions in that movement itself, or is it pretty much unified?
There are no different factions in a monarchist because there is one crown prince here, and his name is Reza Cyrus Pahlavi, who is heir to the throne of Iran, and he is the first child of His Majesty Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. So to say that there are different political factions, that's totally wrong, and we know the monarchies would like to form a state in Iran, which is constitutional monarchy. In past several years, there were certain entities that have to try try to cause friction among the monarchies, and they also have to try to mislead and misinform people about the monarchies. And these entities have been identified by us, and we know what they are doing it and how they are trying to create a chaotic situation for the monarchies. And after some time, they just go away themselves because no one really follows them, because they are being known to public what is their objectives and what they are trying to achieve. So to think that the monarchy has a different function, it is something created by the people who don't want to see Iran to succeed and to go forward in the future.
Well, as far as the monarchist movement is concerned, of course, we're talking about an institution that goes back 2,500 years to the time of Cyrus the Great, who, of course, is mentioned quite prominently in the Old Testament. As we talk about the monarchist movement now, what do you perceive is the strategy of that side of the Iranian political equation in attempting to gain power again in that country? What percentage of people in Iran itself do you think would support the monarchist side of this debate? And in terms of actually engaging in what is called regime change, how do you propose to do it?
If you are talking about the strength of monarchies, as you mentioned, it is the political culture of Iran is monarchy. When you open the textbook, you begin to read about Cyrus the Great, his contribution to Iran, or what he has done. And this has been interwoven into the people's blood. So the monarchies are very strong about it. You mentioned that how is going in Iran, what is the percentage. I won't be able to give percentage, that what is the percentage, how many people would like to have a form of a state as a monarchy, because I don't have that data. But what I have seen so far, if you go to YouTube, Shirin Nashat has a blog over there, and if you type Shirin Nashat over there, there's a video file over there. You could see in one of our files, there is this lady is walking in the street in Iran and saying, "Long live the king." And these are very common occurrences in Iran, that people are shouting, "Long live the king." The monarchies are very, very strong about that part of it. We also have been able to recruit people in Europe, North America, and inside of Iran. They are people inside the system that are working with us at this time.
We'll be back with your Mark Danfoss America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. At the beginning of the show, I read my new commentary for the American Free Press and for Al Bawab, entitled "Mark Dankoff to American Patriots, Bob Barr for President, Forget It." Why? As the New York Times chronicles yesterday, Mr. Barr voted both for the USA Patriot Act as well as for the so-called authorization for Mr. Bush's military intervention in Iraq in March of 2003. You can read that online at Al Bawaba by going to Mark Dankoff's America there, and you'll see that commentary. We're talking this morning with Iraj Azizian of Shireen Nashat Sarbazan to gain the perspective of the monarchist side of the Iranian political scene. You can find those websites at www.alineshat.org and www.sarbazan.org. Iraj, getting into this whole question of Israel, the United States, and Iran, there's an awful lot of talk, of course, that there is going to be a war between the United States and or Israel on the one side and Iran on the other. Let me just mention a couple of articles here that I went through last night. CBS News has a story entitled "Israel Prodding U.S. to Attack Iran." Joint Chiefs Chairman Admiral Mike Mullen leaves Tuesday night on an overseas trip that will take him to Israel, reports CBS News national security correspondent David Martin. The trip, according to CBS, has been scheduled for some time, But U.S. officials say it comes just as the Israelis are mounting a full-court press to get the Bush administration to strike Iran's nuclear complex. CBS consultant Michael Oren says Israel doesn't want to wait for a new administration. Israel's message is simple to the United States. If you don't attack Iran, we will. That's CBS News. And, of course, we can go down to a couple of other ones. Peter Hirschberg has a post with Interpress Service entitled Israel Training to Attack Iran. David DeBato of Global Research, that's Michael Chasadovsky's website at globalresearch.ca. And, of course, many of you know Dr. Chasadovsky has a show here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. David DeBato's post for Global Research is entitled The Coming Catastrophe, U.S. Contingency Plans for Attacking Iran. And, of course, it just goes on and on from there, folks. Iraj, what is your take on this? Do you think that this war is going to happen? And what is the position of Sarbazon when it comes to the question of the United States and or Israel militarily attacking Iran?
Sarbazon organization has a very clear position on that one. we see the threat is real. There is a possible that the U.S. or Israel would launch preemptive military strike on Iran's nuclear facilities. And we have been saying that that's not the solution to the problem in Iran. We know that the cleric regime is a legitimate state. It has to go. It doesn't have the will of people to govern them. And any kind of assault on the Iran will be constituted as a war against Iranian people. It's not the war against the cleric regime. Because when these airplanes or any form of military strike in Iran, it's meant to destroy the nuclear facilities in Iran, and there will be a nuclear explosion because these nuclear facilities are underground, so there will be an earthquake in Iran. And when there will be earthquake, the houses are going to crumble on people. As a result, there will be casualty on the human side. And these people are not going to take a side. There's a misperception that the Israel and the U.S. think because this state doesn't have the will of people. People will uprise and will overthrow the state, but they're making a mistake about it. These people are not going to take a side with the people who is dropping a bomb on their head. So they're going to take a side with the state because it has the resources to fight back with the people who are killing them. So as a result of this war, the cleric regime are going to stay there for a very long time, and the West didn't get rid of the problem. It just provided remedy to the threat, and at some point in the future, these people are going to build their nuclear programs, and Iranian people will say yes to this nuclear program, because if we have it, we could attack at Israel, we could attack at anybody who is showing aggression to us. So it is really going to legitimize the nuclear programs in Iran. So attacking at them is not going to solve the problem. The Israel and the U.S. people need to take a side with Iranian people in order to help them by means of civil disobedience to overthrow a legitimate state in Iran. That's the only way to go about it, really. Not military, because the military is going to destroy people's life. That's the problem.
Well, does this present a particularly difficult political problem for the monarchist movement, or at least some people in the monarchist movement? And the reason I ask this is, in the American media, from time to time, there have been articles that have been published that seem to suggest that at least some of the monarchists have a strong connection to the American neoconservative movement and also to the government of Israel. Now, I'd like for you, first of all, to comment on that, and secondarily, if that's true, that at least there are some monarchists who have been pretty much pro-Israel up to this point, that this could maybe create a very serious issue for the relationship of the monarchist movement generally to both American Jews as well as the government of Israel, if there is an Israeli attack on Iran. How does all of this play out?
Well, it's going to be a very tough sell for everyone here, like because Iranian people are very pro-American people. Iranian people like have a very long history with the Jewish people. It's really going back to the Cyrus the Great, who the Jewish people saw the Cyrus the Great as a liberator. It was His Majesty King of Kings, Reza Pahlavi the Great, who went to city of Isfahan, and he prayed with the Jewish people, and they saw him as a another Cyrus the Great. So you really don't have to be friends with the conservative people or with the Jewish people or someone of that nature to like to feel sympathy for them. Like, we could see their point of view that the threat is looming on them, but at the same time, you have seeing that it's going to be a very, very, very difficult, going to put us in a difficult position, because we want to do a regime change in Iran, and by taking a military action over there is going to deteriorate this healthy relationship that we have at this time. And it's going to create a very mistrust that there won't be any more trust between these peoples anymore. And the people inside of Iran are not going to listen to us. What we have to say to tell them, like, this is what we think should be right course of action, because they will say, these people drop bomb on us. So how do you want us to collaborate with one another and to do a regime change in Iran? So once, if such an event has happened, it's going really to destroy the relationship between everybody.
Yes, and as an American conservative and constitutionalist, I have consistently opposed this notion being pushed by neoconservatives in the United States and by, frankly, many elements of the Jewish lobby in this country, that the United States and or Israel should attack Iran. I think it would be a catastrophe politically, militarily, and morally. I think it could destroy the Iranian nation. I think it could destroy forever any credible relationship that would ever exist in the future between the United States and Iran. And this is something that I have been very concerned about for a long time. And again, I think it'll be interesting to see where all of this plays out, because as I look at this stuff as an outsider, as an American who has no direct connection to any of this, it seems to me that if I was on your side of this, Iraj, as a monarchist, I would probably be concentrating on some of the demographic and economic developments and changes that have occurred in Iran from the time of the Pahlavi regime in the late 1970s. Now, let me explain this. Of course, as you know, I lived in your country all those years ago when my father was an advisor, an American advisor to the Shah's Air Force. And so I know just a little bit about Iran, not much, but a little bit. But one of the things that strikes me as I read is that at the time I was living in Iran, I believe that the total population of the country was around 15 million. I've read recently where the population of Iran is now something like 70 million, and that over half of the population of the country is under the age of 30. So half of the population in a country that now comprises 70 million people has no personal remembrance of Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi or any of the events that surrounded his reign. Now, when I think of this massive population growth in Iran in the last 30 years and the number of people under the age of 30 who live in that country, and some of the statistics that you have sent to me in regard to the economic wealth and distribution of wealth in Iran, it seems to me that there would probably be quite a number of young people under the age of 30 who economically and culturally might have some very serious disenchantment with the Islamic Republic in Iran, that regime. Is that true, and is that the door, as opposed to a military option, is that the door through which those who seek regime change should walk, to exploit that disenchantment of these people, young people in Iran, who may not like at all what's presently happening over there.
Yes. In 2006, Export Development Canada provided a statistic that 75% of the wealth owned by 10% of the population and 25% of the wealth is owned by 90% of the population. And the cleric regime is a form of a kleptocracy and plutocracy. We have it over there. And the young people, it's true that they did not see the reign of His Majesty, but because in their home, the family begin to talk about it, that how he contribute to the pro-Iran. And most of the members are becoming monarchy are the young people. And they tell to their parents that you made a big mistake and you put us in this mess. And by launching a military strike, you are telling, because the cleric regime is going to recruit these people into the armed forces, and these people will be in a position to defend their country. So if you do not launch a military strike, and I'm saying it, like providing civil disobedience tools, like a media outlet, to people to unify themselves, and these are the young people who are going to do revolution, not the older generation, because older generation most likely are preoccupied with their daily lives. So in a first stage of revolution, there is need to these young people to do the revolution, and particularly unemployment rate is close to 30% in Iran. So we have this massive army in Iran that are going to listen to what, a council that guides them outside of Iran, guides them what to do, what not to do, and how to overthrow the state. That will do a lot better than launching a military strike, because once these people, they overthrow the state by their own power, and glory, it is going to be them who are going to determine their own future. But by saying, let's drop some bomb over there, that's not going to solve the problem. And we know for a fact that Democrats wants to have some kind of a dialogue with them. And that's what the Jimmy Carter from the Democrat Party have done in the past. Let's talk with the terrorists and we see where it goes. So it is a very, very wrong perception to have in the mind to think military intervention is going to solve. That's not an option. That's like a suicide. That's how I see it. That you're saying, I'm going to kill myself. Like what I got, I'm going to kill my own self. That's what's going to happen. But when you got these young people who want to have freedom, who want to have life, to better life for themselves, so you are going to willing to destroy your relationship with the young people who are going to determine the future. And these are the people who could work with the Western nations or other type of nations that to build nations, less build nations and less not destroy what we have.
Well, you know, Dr. Kaveh Farouk up in Canada, British Columbia, Canada, Vancouver, he's written the book Shadows in the Desert, Ancient Persia at War. He sends me some articles, Iraj, from time to time, talking about the support, outside support, outside Iran, support for separatistic ethnic and tribalistic movements within Iran, to basically chop Iran into pieces in the interest of certain outside foreign powers and corporations. References have been made to this in regard to some things that have been going on in Balochistan and Azerbaijan and also in Khuzestan province. And as Dr. Farouk has sent me some of these things, I, of course, am also seeing a lot of things written by Philip Giraldi in Pat Buchanan's magazine, The American Conservative, which indicates that the United States and Britain, Britain's MI6, and the Israeli Mossad are behind at least some, if not all, of this activity. Do you have any information on this, and what's your perspective on some of these reports?
I don't know anything about MI6 to be involved in that nature, but we know this much, that this happens. Some of them are made by the cleric regime to say if you do regime change, Iran will be falling apart. That's as much we know about it.
Dan Pasamerica coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're talking today to Iraj Azizian of Shireen Nashat's Sarbazan. Shireen Nashat, of course, is based in Los Angeles, California, Beverly Hills to be exact. You can find her perspective and the perspective of the monarchist side of the Iranian political scene at www.alinashat.org and also www.sarbazan.org. Shireen Nashat's father was Ali Nashat, General Ali Nashat, who was the last commander of Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi's Imperial Guard. General Nashat lost his life in April of 1979, subsequent to being convicted by an Islamic court of all kinds of things that, by Western judicial standards, were not charges at all. But that's an editorial remark on my part. We'll also talk at the beginning of the show about my commentary for the American Free Press and for Al Bawaba. It's entitled Mark Dankoff to American Patriots, Bob Barr for President? Forget it. If you saw yesterday's New York Times on the front page, there was a major story on Bob Barr. I point out in my commentary that Bob Barr has voted for two things that should disqualify him from being a legitimate libertarian contender for president or from receiving any votes from the populist constitutional American right. One is that he voted for the USA Patriot Act. The other is that he voted for Mr. Bush's desired authorization to go into Iraq in March of 2003, a move that Pat Buchanan and many other American patriots have been highly critical of. And, of course, as we look at Mr. Barr, it's going to be important to follow his campaign in the days ahead. And my advice, as I point out in my article, is to either not vote or vote for Ron Paul if he gets into this thing as a third-party candidate after the Republican National Convention is over, or sign on with my friend Chuck Baldwin, running as the Constitution Party candidate for president. But vote for Bob Barr, my advice, do not. I have nothing against Congressman Barr personally. I've met him on one occasion. But I think those two votes that the New York Times chronicles yesterday on the front page of its publication are an indication that American libertarians and constitutionalists and real populist conservatives need to be looking for an option other than Bob Barr. We've been talking, of course, to Iraj Azizian this morning about what's going on in Iran from the monarchist side of the aisle. Iraj, getting back to our conversation then, Canada comes up. I've been reading a lot recently about indications that in Canada there is much activity alleged to be going on up there that has links to the Islamic Republic in Iran regime. What about that?
Yes, Canada Sarbazan organization has identified Canada as a number one state for sponsoring terrorism because what happened with they have found the Sarbazan organization have found legal evidence that there's a cleric with name of Hashemi Rafsanjani. He owns 49% of Highway 407 and Center Point Mall. And according to law of their own nation, which is 83.03, it is a criminal offense to have a terrorist like Rafsanjani to possess assets in Canada. And one of the reasons they could do it, it's called Iran-Canada Business Council, which is funneling money to the politician and have them on their payroll.
Roger, we back to our conversation. We were talking about Canada. You mentioned the name of an organization up there that has apparent links to the IRI regime in Tehran. Let's pick it up there.
Sure. The cleric regime has a liaison office in Canada. It's called Iran-Canada Business Council. And the person who managed the affairs of this council is called Ahmad Reza Tabrizi. what he does, his main task is to recruit Canadian politicians and puts them on the cleric regime's payroll. And what he does, he makes a significant amount of campaign contribution to the politician. As far as we know, that the Liberal Party of Ontario is in the payroll of the Ahmed Reza Tabrizi. We know that the mayor of Toronto, David Miller, has received significant amount of campaign contribution from him. Ahmed Reza Tabrizi himself has said that if you want to do a business trade between Canada and Iran, he is the person that you have to see him, that he could make a deal. So we call him a ringleader, that he's the person in charge of doing it. One thing he has done, we know for a fact that he opens charity foundations. Some of the these charity foundations do not have any kind of work to do with the charity. These are the front for the funneling money from the cleric regime to the politician in Canada. And more interesting that he opens charity foundations and other businesses, and all of them are going to one address, that is 30 Cairn Road, Toronto, Ontario, M3B1T1. One thing else he does, that during New Year's Eve, he has these big parties that ask, like on March 21st, which is the first day of the spring, and Iranian people like to celebrate their first day, and they want to go out. And he throws these big parties, and people go to those events and asking them to volunteer. So he gets people's first name, last name, their phone number, where they live, and he begins to videotape people. So he's creating this big profile from people, that's where they are, and there is no doubt about us. We don't have any doubt that he's watching people, what they do, what they're not doing it. And this council has been very effective about gathering information about Iranian dissidents, what they are doing it, what they are not doing it. Also, this council has been able to, is in a process of recruiting people, so these people could infiltrate into the system. And we know that there are large law firms that are working with these organizations. And where does the future of Canada stand? It's really, really, it's in the hands of the cleric. We could see the cleric could manipulate the Canadian politicians very well. We also have noticed that the major media outlets like National Post and Global Mail that are taking a side with the cleric regimes and using the occasion to make a personal attack on us and printing propaganda in favor of the cleric regime and portraying the cleric regime as a misunderstood regime in the Middle East.
Is the city of Toronto and the province of Ontario, does that seem to be the center of these activities in Canada on the part of the IRI regime?
Yes, because it is highly populated area by Iranian community, and that's why the cleric regime is sort of focusing in the city of Toronto. It has a little bit focus in the city of Vancouver and has in Alberta. In Alberta is last because it's not highly populated by the Iranian community. And we know because these regions are speaking English regions, so the cleric regime likes to focus on these areas. But we know for a fact, for example, Rafsanjani has assets in province of Quebec, because like asset as I mean as a house. He has a house over there in city of Laval, because province of Quebec is French speaking people. So Iranian community would be less reluctant to be in a province that people are speaking French. They prefer to speak English because that's more international language than French. And they have Rafsanjani over there, staying in the province of Quebec, in the city of Laval, stays there, and he has claimed his insurance. Somebody has stole his computer, and he has claimed insurance for that one. So we know that the keep the top-ranked people, the clerics. The clerics are remaining in the province of Quebec, and for to make an investment and infiltrating into the system. And also, City of Toronto is a marketplace that you, if you want to make an investment, that's the place that you want to be and to interact with the Iranian community.
Well, of course, Los Angeles, California, in the United States, is also another major center for Iranian expatriate residents. I have heard figures ranging from 300,000 to 500,000 Iranians living in Los Angeles. Is this same type of activity that you describe in Canada, in places like Toronto and the province of Ontario, is this a similar scene to what's happening in Los Angeles? Is there a lot of IRI activity in Los Angeles?
Yes. The cleric regime is very dominant in that area because Ahmad Reza Tabrizi was able to infiltrate the Provincial Liberal Party in the province of Ontario. So they're able to control the parliament over there, and because majority of Iranians are coming over there and they want to be in a cosmopolitan city, and some of the people really just want to go on with their life, but there are some individuals that they want to do a regime change in Iran. So these people want to identify them. Who are they? What are they doing? They try to get as much information about their background. So this information will be go back to the Iran, and their family in Iran will be harassed. But the point is, you will say, so don't talk about politics, don't do anything, so you will be safe. But that's not the case. What the Canada doesn't understand, that eventually these people are posing a serious threat to Canada as well as to the American people, because these people are here to do a regime change in Canada and the U.S. The Khomeini in 1979 was saying that after this revolution, we are going to export our revolution. And we could see it right now that the revolution has been exported into the Canada. And because these people have a plan to do some kind of a regime change here, and we could see that the Muslim fundamentalism is on rise in Canada, and that Hezbollah has been flexing its muscle in Canada by attacking at the synagogue or some other places, and they're able to show if anything happens, if any kind of a military intervention takes place, these people are going to take some kind of action against Canada and the U.S.
A number of things that he mentions about alleged IRI activity up there in Canada, especially in Toronto and in the province of Ontario. And Iraj was mentioning a fellow by the name of Ahmad Reza Tabrizi. An American might say Tabrizi. I believe Iraj was saying Tabrizi. That name is spelled T-A-B-R-I-Z-I, T-A-B-R-I-Z-I. And in this particular case, his connections to an organization called the Iran-Canada Business Council are well worth closer inspection in regard to what, frankly, is going on up there. And I would editorialize it with the strength of the Israeli intelligence community in Canada and the strength of the organized Jewish lobby in Canada, this could make for a very, very interesting scene in the days ahead, as unseen forces working for the government of Israel might be struggling with forces representing the IRI regime in Iran, both in Canada as well as in the United States, frankly, to produce a new brand of warfare in the Western world that we've never to this extent. And we'll have to be watching Los Angeles and other places in the United States as well for this sort of thing, folks, because it seems to me that between those who are advocates of Israel on the one hand, both in Canada and in the U.S., and those on the other hand who represent the IRI regime in Tehran, that this could make for a real good James Bond-type movie, except that this stuff is real, and it's going to affect the lives of many, many, many people in the days ahead. And that includes folks in the United States and Canada who know little, if anything, about Iran or Central Asia or the Middle East. That's why we do these shows occasionally on my segment on the Republic Broadcasting Network, talking to folks across the political spectrum as it relates to Iran and a number of these other Middle Eastern countries and situations, to kind of gain a grasp, if we can, of what's been happening over there, particularly in the last 60 years or so. Iraj, I'm reading something about an organization in this country called the National Iranian American Council. Who are these people? What is your perspective on them?
Yes, before I proceed to respond to that question, I would like to bring to your listeners' attention that Canada also has provided nuclear materials to the cleric regime, despite the warning by Canadian Security Intelligence Service CSIS that they shouldn't give nuclear materials to the cleric regime, because they have quoted Rafsanjani saying that in this situation that the climate that is realism, that we are living in a political realism, there is need to have advanced technology to confront the enemies. So Canada itself has put itself really on a very tough spot, has been very deceitful to its own people in Canada. Just to name one of them would be this one, that in Canada people donate blood without receiving any kind of a monetary compensation, but the government has decided to sell blood to the cleric regime. That itself, for me, is a sign that the cleric regime is preparing itself for some kind of a war, because purchasing blood and supplying them somewhere, it's meant that these people are planning for some kind of a war, and they want to go to the war with some kind of a nation, and that's how they are planning to prolong their lives in Iran. Not coming back to the question of the National Iranian American Council. Well, our organization, the position will be without prejudice at this time about the National Iranian American Council. We know that this organization is operating same as Iran Canada Business Council. The person who governs that is Trita Parsi. He's well connected with the cleric regime in Iran.
Talking about the National Iranian American Council. Pick it up from there. Go ahead, sir.
Sure. National Iranian American Council is the same as Iran Canada Business Council. It's operating on the same level. It is governed by Trita Parsi, and they are based in Washington, D.C. It is a lobby group which is working in the best interest of the cleric regime in the U.S. Their primary work is to elude a politician as well as American people that the cleric regime is simply misunderstood regime. It's not bad by its nature. It's just by the poor foreign policies that are being made in the past and the current time. The state is reacting to those policies. And what the Trita Party has been doing is trying to play a game with the people that these nuclear programs in Iran are all meant to generate electricity, and it's not anything wrong about it. And the other things that he's focused on, or one of the areas that he's focused is in Iraq, that he's saying it to compromise with the cleric regime, and you're going to win in Iraq, which is totally wrong. And one of the Democrat senator with name of Dianne Feinstein, I hope I'm pronouncing her name right, she has been working with them, and our organization wants to know why she's working with them. They're not in her constituency, and how much she has received, if she has received any kind of money. So we found this council to be really problem for the safety and security of American people to be in Canada, in the U.S., and in what direction they are going. This council has been able to grow and has formed the other form of entities like networking Iranian provincial professional Orange County, which is based in California, and one of the jobs it does is going to the university campuses and is recruiting young people. And again, one more time, this type of entity is this to secure their own future by infiltrating into the system and making sure the Khalilov regime will live very long in Iran. There is another entity which is being identified and having a tie with the National Iranian American Council is Iman Foundation. This one has been well known to work with the Khalilov regime. And just to illustrate one example, it was about 1 year ago, one of the famous singer passed away, and she was, her name is Mahasti, and she was converted to Christianity, but this Iman Foundation came and buried her as a Muslim person, and we could see her images that she was being baptized. She became a Christian person, but this foundation was trying to work in the best interest of the cleric that the faith of Islam is very strong in Iran and people are not converting to any other faith. And they started to do things against her own wish, and it was some kind of a slap to the family. So we have these kind of entities, not just in Canada or the U.S., they're all over the globe, that they're working in the best interest of the cleric regime. Fortunately, in the U.S., this lobby group is not as strong as in Canada. It's kind of, they try to be very subtle about it, very discreet about it, how they want to recruit people, how they want to bring politicians into their board and work in their best interest.
How many people, Iraj, does Sarbazon estimate? Well, let's take Los Angeles, for example. We could take Toronto as well. But in places like Toronto and Los Angeles, how many Iranians are deemed to have a link to the IRI regime in Tehran? How many of them, either direct or indirect, how many sympathizers are they believed to have in Canada and in the United States? Any figures on that?
I wouldn't be able to give a figure, but what I know, it will be a large portion. If I say, let's say 50%, how do I know it is a 50% and what is my source? That's a problem. But I would say because the cleric regime has been able to buy people based on the going around and saying, okay, come and work with us, and we're going to give you money. So that's why, and particularly when someone leaving their home, and you're kind of in rush when you're fleeing your country because you're just thinking about saving your own life. So you're coming out of country empty-handed, and then you're here, you're just struggling to make a living, and when someone offers you lots of money, so you will go toward them. And to give statistic, because one of the things that Sarbazon organization has a mandate that has to be precise, has to be very clear, so that's why I'm not giving a number, but we know for a fact that more and more people are joining them because these people offer money to them. And money, you have some kind of a security. Your future is being secure. That's why people beginning to join them. And if that comes to a stop, because those people have received some kind of fund from the cleric people, they're going to stop sympathizing toward them. But in fact, I know this very well, that if these funds are being stopped, people will stop to sympathize with them because they won't find any interest in them. If you put the relationship based on the money, then you have no real relationship. But what is the percentage? I don't know, and I don't want to give a guess estimated even, because it will be inaccurate. And I don't want to create a state of fear or anything in that nature. And I don't want to to create some kind of environment that Iranian people will be looked by outsider. Maybe he or she is part of that entity. That's what I'm trying to...
No, I understand.
Yes.
I understand.
There are good people out there that, they think about Iran, their country, and they want it to be free. That's what most people want, Iran to be free. Now, wants to be a constitutional monarchy or wants to be a republic, that's a different ballgame. We want our country to be free, and we want this entity to stop their activities.
The two organizations you've discussed in Canada and in the United States, the one being the Iran-Canada Business Council, the other being the National Iranian American Council, are these the two leading organizations of their type in Canada and the United States? That's one question. The second question is, how many organizations and foundations with direct or indirect ties to the present regime in Iran are to be found in North America? Do you have any statistics on that?
The numbers are very high. Like, for example, about the Iran-Canada Business Council, our organization, Sarbazan organization, just found about five entities. Ahmed Reza Tabrizi has opened Paria Trillium Foundation, then it found about the BAM earthquake that had happened. He opened one of the committee over there. The numbers are very high. We shouldn't just rely on the numbers that we could see. About the National Iranian American Council, we know that it has another form of itself. It's called American Iranian Council. Then they have other subcategory. They have called Networking Iranian Professional Society, or other some kind of a name that they are coming. And what happens, we could see over and over, Hushang Amir Ahmadi, who is another member of the cleric regime in the U.S., who is associating with this type of people. Iman Foundation has a direct link with the National Iranian American Council, who is saying that the cleric regime has a right to have a nuclear programs. And they have seminars, they have all kinds of programs that it tries to justify the cleric's regime's right to possess nuclear program. So just for me to say, at this time we have identified five for Iran-Canada Business Council, and we have identified five for National Iranian-American Council. But we know for a fact it is way more than that, because these people are trying to be everywhere. They want to watch people at any time. It is they're trying to create that, because they know it is the only way to control people, to create organization, to create councils, and to bring people. Another one for Iran-Canada Business Council is called, they opened an entity back in 1998, it's called Mohandes, means engineer. It just goes on. When you go after these people, you will see it is very wide range that they are trying to bring the people inside. And these one thing we know for a fact, these people are really interested about recruiting young people, bring them in, and they try to throw big parties, and bring in singers, and we know who are these singers that are associating with them, because these singers have been told, if you want to make money, you are coming to to take part with us, and we're going to hold events for you. And if these singers, that's how they make their money. So if they're not working with them, they're not making any money. So that's how they are able to control the young people, And we have found these singers, like a 50-year-old man, is dressed in some kind of flashy clothes and something that's not even in the character of that age of the person we have. So it is really the focus on young people, and that is really to be concerned, that when these young people are being brainwashed by these entities, the future is really gloomy for the U.S. and the Canada.
Yes, speaking of Canada, there's one thing that I wanted to ask you that's kind of interesting to me. Of course, many of our listeners know that the Jewish lobby is very strong in Canada, and it has very strong links to the government of Israel, and that those entities have strong links and representation in the Canadian news media. I'm referring, for example, to CanWest Communications, owned by the Asper family, which controls so many of the print organs in Canada, which has a strong pro-Zionist, pro-Israel orientation. I would think that any organization or movement in Canada that opposed the IRI regime in Tehran would get a favorable press in Canada. And yet you've indicated to me that media outlets like the Globe and Mail and the National Post have had some very, very negative things to say about the Iranian monarchist movement. What all is behind that?
So far, we note that these people, like we know for a fact, if this type of a media outlet, not yours, that they receive money before they publish some kind of an article. Like I give one example. There was a person with name of Hossein Drakhshan. He was well known among Iranian dissidents that he is the puppet of the cleric regime in Canada. And he was going around and spreading propaganda that the reform is the way of future for Iran. And he was keep continuing preaching these type of propaganda. Eventually, our organization, Sarbazan organization, found a video clip of him and his writings that he was mocking Canadian people, that he's disrespecting them, and eventually he was being unplugged. But because these people have infiltrated in the system, they're able to advance their agenda.
Who is behind this current move to get the United States to go to war with Iran? I argue that the driving force behind it all is the American Jewish community, as that is expressed through the American neoconservative movement, and also the government of Israel in Tel Aviv. These folks are behind this, folks, and we have to oppose this with every fiber of our being.
Okay.
Going into the fall of 2008.
Yeah, we're a couple minutes away.
What are you patriots going to do in regard to the election? I give you three options. One is not to vote. The second is to vote for Congressman Ron Paul, who runs as a third-party candidate.
Well,
the third option is to vote for my friend Chuck Baldwin, running as the presidential candidate of the Constitution.